We have begun the recording.
America for 300 years has been the land of promise for the rest of the world. The land of new frontiers, new opportunities.
Hey, wait the hell you get up.
Clicking sounds. Sounds that reveal the presence of radioactive rays. The instrument, a Geiger counter, is converting radioactivity into sounds we can hear.
Hey, what the hell with it?
Okay. Good evening and welcome to Tank Ride. It is I, Sputnik. Across the aisle from me, of course, is always Victor.
Come on, yeah.
Tor.
Hello.
This evening, Victor will have some insights on the documentary Last Days. Of course, Pyra Roundup. And some talk about the Sony DRM rootkit. Tor will have some Dick Cheney tidbits, or something we like to call Dick Bits.
Didbits.
I, Sputnik, will be musing about comic books. So, without further ado, Tor, what do you have for us on our esteemed vice president?
Well, at the place where I work, we had our charity book sale today, so I browsed the shelves.
Excellent.
And I found a book. It says it's called How Washington Really Works. By Charles Peters.
I noticed it's a thin book, Tor.
A real insider.
It's not real thick. And I haven't read it yet either.
Have you read any of other of Mr. Peters' works?
No, I don't even know who he is.
Maybe he's not even from Washington. He's just some guy.
He said Peters.
Oh, he's got quotes on the back from Dick Time Peters. And the New York Times. They're all like in the book.
Oh, Women's Wear Daily.
Yeah, and Washington Post, Red the Chicago book. Tribune, The Nation.
Ladies Home Journal.
You know, they all like the book, so it can't be that bad, right?
Oh, no, I wouldn't think so.
And it's a picture of Charles Peter on the back, and he has suspenders.
Oh, well.
Well, you know. I would say that's very reliable then.
Yeah. Right. So, anyway, I grabbed the book because I thought it might have some neat stuff in it.
Some insights.
It's an older book. The copyright is 1993. And who knows, maybe he might have a new version out by now, but this one's 93. And so I went to the index, and I didn't have time to look for much, so I just went straight to Dick Cheney.
Okay.
And he has a few entries.
And who was Dick Cheney in 1993?
Dick Cheney was the Secretary of Defense. Maybe not in 93, but...
Previously.
This
on
part,
L.A. Law.
He was, yeah.
That's right. He played one on TV.
Right. So let me just read. This is just a part of a paragraph here. And this is in a... reference to just before the first Gulf War began. Remember, we had a war with Iraq before.
Watch the movie Jarhead.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
okay. Right. Anyway, it says, 2 days before the invasion, Pat Lang, a Defense Intelligence Agency employee, wrote a memo predicting that Saddam Hussein would move against Kuwait. But Lang received no reaction from his superiors. Then, the day before, he again warned that an invasion was coming. That night or the next morning, Colin Powell, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staffs, wanted to advise the White House to issue a warning to Iraq, but he was overruled by Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney.
Wow.
So basically, if Dick Cheney would have recommended the White House be warned about the Iraq about to invade Kuwait, White House, possibly through some diplomatic action, could have actually stopped that whole war from happening. So this little episode of incompetence has now thrust Dick Cheney up to the vice presidency.
Screw up, move up.
Yeah.
That's the American way.
That's right. So I just found that to be interesting. And,
now, does that count as irony? I mean, would that be an Alanis Morissette kind of non-irony? Or?
It's really up there. I think the judges have ruled that, yes, that is ironic.
Truly ironic.
Yeah. So I just felt that was interesting.
Absolutely.
And so this is how we get the incompetent leaders that we have today.
You know, I just so hope that Dick, and all of us insiders, of course, refer to him as Dick.
He likes that.
He does. Mm-hmm. you know, gets Congress to go along with allowing the CIA to torture. You know, we've been outsourcing for far too long, and I think that the boys at the CIA need a little hands-on experience. You know, because, well, as our esteemed president said in South America, we're about human rights.
Those guys, they've really lost all traction. I mean, they really have.
My
God. Don't even...
Not everybody can clamp an electrode to the genital. I mean, it's
that's
just,
right. Yeah, the old Bolivian telephone. Hello, who's there? Oh, I mean, I love this. I mean, all last week, he's down in South America trying to convince everyone, hey, how about if we make the whole Western Hemisphere a free trade zone? Free for us. Screw it for you, though. Yeah, you know what? No one seemed to be buying what he was selling. I don't even
think the Republican Party's buying it much anymore.
No.
I think there's enough. There's enough anger all around that it's just an incompetent administration.
Look at some of the national elections. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there was a message being sent that, hey, I don't know.
The elections he's helped out on hasn't really helped. Yeah,
that's right.
Arnold didn't roll over too well either. All his propositions got.
Yeah.
It's almost like people are becoming dissatisfied with Republicans.
Oh, my God. But
no, I think that's mainly the regime, the administration, the regime. I don't know if it's necessarily the Republican Party. I think in the heartland or the red zone, I don't know.
There's
a definite support of the values that make people like Tom DeLay great or some kind of.
Oh, absolutely.
We still have some loonies, you know. We just have to look at Kansas.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let's embrace intelligent design.
Well, I, for one, fear his noodly appendage and the rising of the flying spaghetti monster.
Our ruler. We all believe in the flying spaghetti monster.
And I spoke his name, which is a very risky thing to do.
This is true. You can incur wrath.
I feel it's important to state his name because I think he who shall not be noodly named again should be appearing in textbooks alongside intelligent design. Because,
you know, let me say this about that, if I may.
Spaghetti.
Yes, spaghetti for pie.
Go look up the flying spaghetti monster.
Well, okay, so if I'm just throwing this out here as an idea, how about this? Okay, fine. We'll teach intelligent design in our public schools. However, let's do it this way. It shouldn't be taught in a science class, biology class, or whatever. But let's get the federal government and all the right-wingers that really feel strongly about this to kick in more money into the public school system so we can get a cultural studies group in there so we can look at everybody's origin stories.
Yeah.
I can almost put my ear to the wind and hear neocon poo-poos puckering, thinking that their narrow-mindedness would actually result in some cultural diversity and understanding. Because, I mean, to coin a phrase, render under Caesar what is Caesar's and render under God what is God's, religion and science are both fine in their own way, but to mix one with the other is to do an injustice to both.
I haven't looked into it, but I guess there's a museum, some creationism museum that shows dinosaur, like oxen had these, you know, things to pull the plow, and they were designed for dinosaurs, and the guy's got dinosaurs in them because men and dinosaurs in his creationist world lived together because, you know, there weren't these millions of years. It all happened in 6,000. So the dinosaurs obviously coexisted with man and were obviously plowing man's fields.
Man, you could do some serious plowing if you had a dinosaur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got to find that museum and go get my picture with the dinosaur.
I don't know if you can get him to plow a straight line. But man, that's going to be a deep...
What do you dangle in front of the dinosaur?
Yeah,
you know, like some kind of little person. carrots.
If you use the whip, you run the risk.
That's
all I'm saying.
No, but some kind of theology course, if there were time in, you know, the public school curriculum and people would actually, you know, care to teach kids about spirituality, that'd be really cool. But it's just...
If the right-wing Christian groups want to kick in the money...
That's not the point. The point is science, bad. Religion...
Of course you're right,
more
Victor.
Better than science. It's, and that's what the whole intelligent design... I was disappointed by the ruling in Kansas. That,
although they had interviews with several of the Kansas teachers. And the majority of them were, or at least the ones that they interviewed, were saying that, okay, fine. You want it taught? I'll teach it. But I'm not going to put it on... I'm not going to weigh it equally with evolution. I mean, I can say, okay... Here, it's not a theory, but here's this thing that I'm going to put out there and so forth. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You're doing an injustice to both.
Yeah.
I mean, my feeling is that if you gave science and religion the space and the time in their own right, I think you'd probably find that they probably meet somewhere in the middle. However, to try to mix one over the other or try to weigh one over the other, as I say, you do a huge injustice to both. Plus, you're essentially teaching the next generation of kids to think like 13th century peasants.
Well, yeah, we're at that right now. I just find it really interesting because we're where Galileo was with the science.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're learning things, but you just can't explain everything. So then the masses need to have an explanation for everything. And if science can't handle it, you have to go to religion because it just doesn't.
Absolutely.
I just can't believe that an all-powerful God...
He's talking about the noodly appendages again.
The noodly appendages.
That an all-powerful God...
His noodliness.
His noodliness.
...would want to do things like, you know, create universes and planets and all that other stuff by any other means than using science. Because
yeah.
Because that's a level of perfection when you have science and things working on the atomic
right.
and galactic level of things working together. That's like the ultimate perfection of God. And then you have these, you know, heretical, you know, crazies out there thinking that somehow God is about magic.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know,
and then
a miracle
occurs.
Rabbit out of my hat, you know, yeah. You know, when I think that, you know, we don't understand it yet, but all these miracles and all the everything else, I think probably can be explained by science if we had a better understanding of science.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have both, but the mixing, not so much. Now, again, if the religious right would like to kick in money to support our public school system and get, to coin a phrase, fair and balanced theology and cultural studies going, I think that would be
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, no, it should definitely fall under cultural studies.
Yeah.
Well,
and
just to finish my point, if someone is...
Please do, Tor.
If someone is turning their back on science, then in my opinion, they are turning their back on God. Because they're denying the ultimate perfection of God. And they are, you know, turning to the dark side.
Well said, sir. By the way, have you bought your copy of 3?
Speaking of.
To be honest, no, I haven't got my copy of 3 yet.
Oh.
I might put on my Christmas list, though.
Well, you know, it's kind of like in the HBO series The Sopranos, where, of course, The Godfather comes up quite a bit, and they just refer to it as 1, 2, or 3. So, well, from now on, we'll just, you know. Actually, I was in one of our local video stores, and they had a new copy of what, of course, we all came to know is just Star Wars, but now it's 4, A New Hope.
Oh, yeah. They got the New Hope title by the second time it went around to the theaters. Back
is that
probably
oh,
in?
Oh, really?
Probably in about 1979, 1980. Just
well,
before
where the hell
that
have I been?
Empire Strikes Back comes out. Yeah, they Lucas added the number 4 number on it pretty early on.
Yeah, I remember when that. I remember,
yeah.
Oh, this is episode 4.
Yeah.
Whoa, what happened
which,
before?
Which
what's
got,
happening after? This is
got
so
me
great.
All excited.
Yeah,
thinking,
that's right.
Oh, man, there's going to be 3 more coming for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, worked on me. I'm waiting for 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at the same time as rumored, there would be a 7, 8, or 9.
And
Lucas
Sputnik
has sense then he won't.
We'll say this. All I'm hoping for out of 7, 8, 9, more nudity, okay? That's all I ask. A little bit more nudity. Hey, okay.
You should write a letter to George.
Well, how about in 3 when that green Jedi that was about to get chopped? Holy Ned. She was loaded for bear. Of course, you know, that was right before she got killed by the clones.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I'm asking. A little nudity.
3 was a lot of fun, though.
Come on, give me something. All right.
You got a bunch of stuff in your lap, Sputnik. What's all that stuff?
Well, before I get to that, because I have musing to do.
Musing?
Musing.
Okay.
I'm going to look at this for a while. Actually, I was thinking, Victor, what do you have for us on Last Days?
All right, well, this one might take me a couple minutes.
Go.
Hopefully not too long, but let me set the stage a little bit here for this one. I'll delve into my past, and it was the spring of 1994. I was going to school. I had a part-time job on the short bus, and my job on the short bus was to strap in the differently abled, and
excellent.
A lot of my great friends from college, and I rode around on this bus and had a 60-something-year-old golfer as my driver, and we listened to oldies and Larry King a lot, too much.
Well, I know Larry
my
King oldies is definitely like no oldie. Business. I mean,
oh yeah, it was
let's
it was
be
awesome.
Honest.
So there was this afternoon. It was a Friday afternoon, and my birthday was a couple days previously, and I was getting ready to go out and buy all the beer and all the essentials to throw a giant party that night. And it was in the afternoon, and we were taking all the kids home, and I was on the bus, and we were listening to Larry King, and all of a sudden Larry King comes on, kind of confused, doesn't quite know what he's talking about, and
that could be any Larry
I know
King
and he announces to us that some rock star Kurt Cobain was found dead of an apparent suicide.
Wow.
And I turned to the 60-year-old driver who knew nothing about any of this, and I turned to all my drooling compatriots on the bus, and I couldn't talk to anyone about it, and I was completely shattered, and I was so ruined. It really wrecked, you know, we had a dirge instead of a party, and we listened, my friends and I were great fans of Kurt Cobain, and it was a really horrible time, when he died. And so he was really big in my life, and musically, I just loved all his music, and with Nirvana and everything. And then I heard that Gus Van Sant was making another one of his pseudo documentary films about Kurt Cobain this time, and he was calling it Last Days. He'd done this previously on Elephant, which was a fake fictionalized version of the Columbine massacre, where he had all these kids kind of pretending they were in the event, but it wasn't the event, so it wasn't really real. You're kind of in a weird place watching a film like this, because it's not like watching Nixon or something where I'm really Nixon, this is really what happened, this is really the story of the thing. This is a fictionalized version where you can get away with doing whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Well, with Elephant, he did a really good time juxtaposition of showing all these different kids going to school and running into this violence that eventually happens at the end, where these Columbine kids, pick up their guns and go in and, go on the shooting spree. With Last Days, he created this rock star named Blake, who's very much like Kurt Cobain, and is this depressed rock star walking around in his last couple days of his life before he dies, and just films this very bleak picture of what was happening at that time before he died. And I really was disappointed with this film. I really hated it. I was really upset with it.
What disappointed you?
Well, the thing is, and I remember talking about this a couple weeks ago about how in modern films you don't get the pacing that you everything's MTV and fast and everything. And with this movie, you got really great pacing. I mean, really slow pacing, really, so little happens in this film that it's just hard to believe. And in the first 20 minutes, I loved it. And I've seen films by Tarkovsky. I've seen Andrei Rublev, which in the original was like over 200 minutes long. It goes on and on and on. But for this movie, I wanted something to happen. I wanted something to be revealed. I wanted some glimpse inside behind the shell. I wanted to see what I had thought about the life and the death of Kurt Cobain. I wanted to see something, and he didn't give you that.
Oh.
He left it completely ambiguous. And he had these really great shots of the trees and Blake, who's Kurt Cobain, just running past you. And then he'd show it again from a different angle, only he'd track and follow him running down. And, there were these beautiful shots like that, but it was frustrating. It was frustrating and nothing happened. And I was excited about the film, but by the time I got done with it, I was mad at the film. And then the next day I woke up.
All art and no meat.
Yeah, all art, no meat. And
yeah, good way of putting it.
By the time
no
I woke
payoff.
Up, I was even more angry about it. And then it wore off, and I started thinking, okay, well, that's great. He did leave it ambiguous, but he didn't say enough. I guess that's where I finally land with it. I do appreciate the fact that he didn't really show what happened at the end of this character's life. I think that these pseudo-documentaries where you're allowed to do whatever you want and not be in reality, where you're not really saying it's Kurt Cobain, it gives him the leeway to make anything happen or have it go however he wants. But for this one, he just didn't do anything with it, but very subtle things happen, and I bet if I watch it again I might have a little more appreciation for it.
I
just don't think for a casual fan, even for a great fan, I think you might walk away from this really disappointed.
I see.
I think in this genre, which is a really kind of an emergent thing that only he's doing. I mean, great pseudo-documentaries like Spinal Tap and things like that are comedies, mm-hmm. like the Christopher Guest series of films, A Mighty Wind, and those are they're a hoot. They're really fun. But he's doing this dramatically, and it's really well done. But I was strongly disappointed. If you loved Elephant, I can't say you would love Last Days.
Okay.
And I really liked Elephant. But
as did I. I mm-hmm. thought it was a very good film.
Yeah, I did like that he left his death scene kind of ambiguous. And there's some quotes floating around on the internet by Kim Gordon, and I'm not sure, I haven't been able to verify it, but that his death may not have been a suicide, and there's all these Tom Grant rumors that he was murdered, and right. and all this that no one can really verify or say otherwise. But it's kind of interesting that Gus Van Sant chose to leave things ambiguous, and I guess I give that a little bit of a plus side for that. But it was well acted too. He had Michael Pitt playing the Kurt Cobain character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Michael Pitt was in Larry Clark's film Bully, where mm-hmm. it was a really great film.
Choice.
Oh, he's a great character. He just didn't have to do anything except mumble, make Rice Krispies, and or Cocoa Puffs or whatever, and and puke here and there. He kind of glorified the character. You know, Kurt Cobain had a heroin problem. You know, he had a drug problem.
Right.
You never see him do any drugs. You never see any drug use. You never see anything. It is kind of putting him in a glorified position. So by the end of the film, I was really disappointed that he chose to leave everything ambiguous and then still frame it in such a way that he was on this pedestal.
I see.
So, yeah. I went round and round all week thinking about this movie, and we don't have all night to talk about it because I could go all night about it, but a lot of people I really like really liked it, and I hated it. I'll give this on the Victor scale. I give this a 4.6.
Oh,
I would have gone lower, but I went to a depth, and then now I'm coming back up, and I'm thinking, yeah, 4.6 is about right. I really disliked the movie.
Yeah, but given its due that at least it had some decent casting, and so forth.
I'll probably go back to my Nirvana albums and listen some more to Kurt Cobain, but I don't think I need to plumb the depths of that film again.
Well, it sort of reminded me what you were saying is that at least they didn't go to the cheesy depths of the Wired movie. I don't know if either...
Michael Chiklis played...
Michael Chiklis, that's right. And it's like, boy, he's really redeemed himself from that one. Because
I never saw it, but he was the...
I saw that movie. I was up really, really late. And I turn on the TV, and here's this awful movie. It's based on the Bob Woodward book about the life and death of John Belushi.
Right.
And he's got to take you to those last agonizing moments where he's just dying of that speedball. It's like, boy, I just didn't have to go here. I mean, this wasn't necessary.
I have trouble with the pseudo-documentary, though, too, like the Werner Herzog. I never saw Incident at Loch Ness, but there are some other people making these.
Right.
We're documentaries, but we're not. It's kind of real. There's a film called It's All Gone, Pete Tong, about a DJ mm-hmm. who loses his hearing. And they frame it as if it were a real documentary, but it's all up in the air. And it's not really, but it was a good film, and I like the premise of that. And fake documentaries can be fun, but I'm always in a weird place with them. Like, do I really like?
Kind of. What was that one? the Rattles or the Ruddles or?
Ruddles. All you need is cash.
All you need is cash.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
They never get enough credit for that. The Python
the Ruddles.
People.
Yeah.
See,
but that is totally.
Yeah, that's
over
just
the top.
Fun. I mean, when they're a comedy, it does mm-hmm. work.
Oh, yeah.
It's much easier when it's comedy than when it's they're going for true drama.
Well, plus they were really hitting that subgenre beautifully of the mm-hmm. Beatles documentary. And it's like, and then in 1966, John introduced Paul to a new substance, tea. That was perfect because it was a huge slab of cheese and it was great.
But if you think about it, like War of the Worlds was probably the first, fake documentary. Where they tried to pretend they were real and doing a drama, and
right.
that was a breaking news thing.
Absolutely. Well, do you have
tough cheese.
Some things for us on our pirate brethren?
Well, I wanted to say this is bad news for he and his noodly appendages, but the number of pirates in the world has apparently taken a jump where it's been on a decline, and that's part of the premise of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, is that with the rise in global warming, there has been a steady decrease in the number of pirates in the world. So,
But I think it's really just underreporting of pirates.
Yes, I think the mainstream media, liberal elitists are not reporting on pirates as they should.
They are dropping the pirate ball.
Definitely. So off the coast of Somalia, a group of pirates attacked a cruise ship. And, you know, they put the fear back in pirate by attacking with rocket
grenades. Did they use the Jolly Roger?
I don't know.
You know, I'm thinking that automatic weapons fire and RPGs,
RPGs.
Is kind of the modern 21st the century way of saying, Gar! Avast!
So, apparently, I mean, this is just...
And they attacked the love boat. See that rock?
Yeah, that's just crazy. I mean, when you're on the love boat, you don't expect to be attacked by pirates. So, unless it's an inside job, you know, an Isaac, yeah. You know.
That's right.
With a dock, you can't really trust that guy. But the captain, I don't know what his name was. What was the captain on the love boat?
Steubing.
Yeah, Steubing apparently decided that the best thing to do would be to try to outrun him. So he pumped it in high gear and then turned away from him and then it kind of outran him. But they also had this thing called, I think it's an LRAD.
What do you mean he outran them?
Yeah, he outran the pirates in his cruise ship. Apparently, those things go from 0 to 60.
Were they in
like
a raft or something?
They were in really small
ships.
Well,
I heard he had all the passengers you push. I mean, like...
They all got him.
Or they reached their hand over the side and like scooping at the water. Pirates.
But I thought it was really funny that they also had on board this special... device that created sound waves, these where they use this disc to condense them. It's made by some company out of San Diego, but where they can condense these sound waves and then aim them at the pirate ships to create these ear-shattering decibels of noise.
So they were expecting trouble.
Yeah, I know. That's what's funny about it. It's like that they had this, we'll just pull out our anti-pirate defenses and aim our, you know, high-powered noise at them to...
Well, how did they sell
away?
This cruise? It's like, come see an exotic land ruled by warlords.
Exotic Somalia and get attacked by pirates.
I mean, Fantasy Island it ain't, okay?
Yeah. But can you imagine going on a cruise and coming back? How was your trip? Well, fine. We were attacked by pirates.
I was in the bar when the RBG hit, but I heard it was something else.
Yeah, that's a cruise to remember. I think that's
no doubt.
So anyway, pirates, everybody. They're scary.
They're out there and they're underreported. And underappreciated, I feel.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I would like to do a little bit on comic books or graphic novels, whatever you prefer. I'm sure I'll be betraying my age in saying this, but I came up through the Silver Age, which is to say the 60s. This would, of course, be Marvel and DC Comics. So that, of course, was all the brightly covered, colored tights, origin stories, secret identities, and so forth. And, of course, all of them were stamped with the approved by the Comic Code Authority.
Oh, the Comic Code
So
Authority.
Everything was above board, and I wasn't frightened by anything.
McCarthy never got your...
Although, I have to say that one of my favorite group of books to read... at that age was Star Spangled War Stories. Now that was a whole group of comic books, which included Sergeant Rock, mm-hmm. The Haunted Tank, and my personal favorite, Enemy Ace. I've been a fan of Enemy Ace for years. I've got almost all of the original Jack Kirby illustrated.
Oh wow, Jack
stories.
Kirby did those.
Oh yeah, and awesome. I mean World War I flying stories as told from the perspective of a German ace who's obviously, like the Red Baron, he's like a Richthofen, and just great stories. And it was the first time that I think I really saw that comic books could, in fact, really have depth, characters, good story development, and so forth. Of course, in the 70s, they turned to, you know, wanted to be more issue driven. More, you know, current events and so forth, which sometimes worked out when you had things like, you know, Green Lantern was kind of a right-wing bigot and the Green Arrow was, you know, left-wing.
Oh, the Green Arrow was such a lefty. That was awesome.
Yeah, I love the Green Arrow.
Was awesome.
I was totally behind
was
the
so
Green Arrow.
That was so funny, yeah.
If I could have grown a little blonde Van Dyke, I would have done it. You know, but there was a lot of storylines that I thought they really... tried to show depth by kind of ruining the characters. Like Iron Man became an alcoholic.
Oh, I hated that. I hated that. I was around for that.
You know, it's like, well,
or Spider-Man was always troubled or whatever. And most of those, to me, honestly, didn't really work out.
Well, that was from his birth. Like, from the birth of the character of Spider-Man, he was whiny. I mean, that was like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, Spider-Man. You
know, yeah, Aunt May's health is really fragile, yet she must be, what, about 200 years old by
Uncle
this time?
Uncle Ben, though. You know, you have the Uncle Ben
don't
thing.
Don't get me started. It's like, look, you can climb on walls, you got super strength, you can do all of these things, plus your biggest dilemma in the day is, gee, do I sleep with Mary Jane or Gwen?
It's
time
to cowboy the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's, you know...
We have the explicit tag. So.
That's right. So the only time that I really thought it worked in the 70s, and I believe you would agree with me on this, Victor, is the X-Men. I think they took the whole dynamic and really did something with it.
Yeah, I love the X-Men in the original comic books, the way they did that.
Their future series where the Sentinels took over.
141 and 142, for anyone who's wondering.
We have the numbers. But
that was off the top of my head, too, by the way.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. But I would have to say that more into the late 70s, early 80s, when the Comics Code Authority really was just like, let's not really worry about that anymore. And that's when I think that you started getting new publishing houses out there, and you got people not so worried about, well, the Comics Code Authority was put on there for the 50s because, like marijuana, like every other thing that got a bad rap, it was contributing to teenage delinquency.
Right. But wasn't it an original Green Arrow that one of them said, well, forget the Comic Code Authority, we're going to publish this anyway without your seal?
I believe it was. If it wasn't that, I think it might have been a Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was, and that was a big groundbreaking thing.
It was.
Kind of crested the wave where people all of a sudden said, oh, wait, we could do this under a separate publishing house then have the ability, like Dark Horse Comics and those, to just do whatever
favorites.
We really want to do. Yeah, I love that.
So I really think that in the 80s, comic books, well, they became graphic novels. You had, one of my personal favorites has always been Alan Moore. He's always, yes, Alan Moore, the chosen one.
Yeah.
You know, he's done some of
the... the Tolstoy and Dostoevsky of comic books,
absolutely,
I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. He's done some of my favorite series like The Watchmen, epic movie. Or I'm sorry, epic story.
Yeah, epic.
And
truly.
They're thinking of making it into a movie. I hope they can do it justice.
I don't know if they can, but you know, nowadays, sure they did X-Men justice. I thought they really did a good job with the X-Men, mm-hmm. but it's because they parsed it down to a small thing. You can't do that to Watchmen unless you broke it down into a series of three movies.
Oh, yeah.
You could do it that way, maybe. I mean, that might be a possibility because it's too big.
It's way too big and too spanning.
Yeah, and it's too awesome how it's spanning.
They should make it into a franchise.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, it would have completely the weight
you'd
of
have to
Star
have,
Wars.
They'd have to have complete faith in it.
I'm sorry, but I think it would be. I think the story has that magnitude.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah, they've been talking about making it a film since the 80s.
Absolutely.
It's just, Alan Moore, he's kind of particular.
Oh, and I also want to say...
Which is great.
You know, along the enemy ace line, I just want to do a shout out to... Garth Ennis and Russ Heath for Enemy Ace War in Heaven, which covers Enemy Ace's tour in World War II. Also very excellent. A two-issue series from DC, but very good. But also the prestige format George Pratt Enemy Ace War Idol. This book, you can just have this around and just look at the artwork and read the story, not know anything about it, and it's still very moving, very good.
Well, Garth Ennis did Preacher, too.
Preacher.
Well, he also had a hand in The Punisher. And he's one of the ones who made Punisher kind of the over-the-top gore that really showed up in the movie, which I thought was awesome. I love seeing a movie that went back to the 1980s, real gore kind of film. It did a great job. Not all comic book movies have to have this sanitary level to it. Like Sin City. You know, Frank Miller's Sin City wasn't all pretty. I mean, Sin City was over the top that
exactly.
way. Yeah.
They did justice to that in the casting,
beautiful.
In the look, an excellent series of books and stories, also very good movies.
Yeah,
so,
it's a film that was really fun to watch.
So whether you're a comic book reader, first time or long time, definitely check these out if you haven't already.
Tor, your thoughts?
Tor.
But Nick, what I really want to know is...
Yeah? Is there enough nudity in comics? Because, I worry about
that. When
is
there going to be some nudity?
Where's the nudity?
Well, that wasn't my question. What I really want to know is, did you order the X-ray glasses? Did you order Charles Atlas' Guide to Bodybuilding? Did you order the hovercraft plans?
No, but
did
I...
Did you order the sea monkeys?
I had the sea monkeys.
Yeah, my brother had the sea monkeys,
And I sold the greeting cards where you could get the fabulous prizes.
I had inflatable silver thing that was supposed to be like a hovercraft. And I'm sure out of my backyard over the neighbors and disappeared, I'm sure someone reported it as a UFO at some point because it was reflective and no one could make sense of it. And I couldn't retrieve it either.
I ordered the tank. And it was more or less a box, which I could have made at home. Although I wish I had for our show.
Yeah.
But yeah. Alan Moore also did a series, which I believe that we talked about in our first Tank Riot episode, which is V for Vendetta.
And we missed Guy Fawkes Day.
Guy Fawkes Day, last Saturday, 400th anniversary. Always remember the 5th of November.
Yeah. And where the hell's my V for Vendetta film?
Absolutely. This March, coming up. But in the meantime...
March?
In March.
March? We have to wait till March now?
As we talked about in the first podcast.
I thought it was put off until like later in the winter.
New March.
Holy moly.
Because we need that emotional distance from the bombings in London.
Well, that's just...
I know.
Wow, I had no idea it was going to be put off that far.
I was excited
about this movie.
Yeah, it's like the movie Independence Day and the 9/11. Which...
Yeah. Or gangs in New York. Oh, yeah, that had so much to do with 9/11.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? It was just this tiny little bit at the end that showed the Twin Towers. People, let's try to get over it. But anyways, V for Vendetta. The Watchmen and V for Vendetta, the Dark Knight series, these are all stories that you can get in bound form and are definitely worth the money and the time.
Yeah, I don't think you should always wait for the movie because these are great reads. I mean, like Watchmen you can get bound cheap and... V for Vendetta, I actually have a
reading
bound
still
copy.
Still can be fun.
Yeah, well,
it can be.
Really
very
great
entertaining
reading, and these are definitely for adults. For adults.
Definitely for adults. Another series, I mean, I know, loyal listeners, that I'm not going to cover every title that you like, and you know what? I need you to tell me about that, because I would like to continue talking about these books, ones that I discover or ones that I have read in the past. So please let us know at feedback@tankriot.com. Just tell us tell us if we're screwed in the head. And you know what? We'd appreciate that, too.
And tell me what I need to read.
Absolutely. If you've got something, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, we especially want to hear from you Archie fans.
Oh, no. Yeah, right. You know, do your friends call
unless
you
Unless you're Garth Ennis and you're doing the new Archie series.
Yeah, that's
I'd like to see Garth Ennis and Alan Moore have a stab at
That would be great.
Archie. Literally.
And, you know, here's a title that I really love, Terry Moore's Strangers in Paradise. I love this series. I can't say enough about it. It's just got great characters, great story, a lot of emotion.
I've never heard of that one.
Also, a new one that's on the New York Times bestseller list in hardcover right now is Guy DeLisle's, I believe that's the pronunciation, and I'm going to probably slaughter this, Capital of North Korea, Pyongyang, A Journey in North Korea. He's a animator who's working for a French company, and he has, as most of you I'm sure know, animation is pretty much farmed out now to Southeast Asia. South Korea and North Korea both have a chunk of that market. So here's his experiences in North Korea. Excellent read. So as I say, I am sure I have not covered everything. If there's something you'd like to hear about or talk about or let us know, hey, we'd be glad to hear about it. Again, feedback@tankriot.com. Gentlemen, final thoughts.
Watch out for that Dick Cheney.
He is the embodiment of
evil. You never know when he's going to tell the truth. You're pretty much certain that he's always lying, actually.
Would you describe him as being the very skin of evil?
Darn close.
I would think so, too.
You call that skin.
Yeah. Mm. Skin. Fleshy.
Well, in fact, he might have the heart of evil.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm doing a total Star Trek ripoff on that one. Because that was the one where Tasha Yar got killed. Remember that big black muddy thing?
Don't remind me of Tasha Yar getting killed.
Yeah.
I know. I'm a little misty still.
Yeah.
But she came back later on as a Romulan.
Yeah, but come on, Romulan. Give me a ring.
Yeah, I know. It didn't work for me.
No.
Victor?
I would say watch out for the Sony CDs because there's recent reports in the tech world of their Sony DRM, which is actually a rootkit that once you say yes to their end-user license agreement installs on your Windows operating systems in general. It's also Unix I'm avoiding any content enhanced Sony CDs at this point.
All right, good to know. All right, excellent. Well, until next week, everyone.
Oh, we should add that.
Till next week.
We did promise a Halloween riot update.
That's true.
And in short, there was in fact rioting. The mayor got really mad. The city council is upset, and they just might cancel Halloween.
There was no damage, but there was massive pepper spraying.
You know, if I can say one thing about this is that we had a leap back or whatever. So the bars were open a little bit extra, and everyone was like partying kind of hard. Why do they send the stormtroopers out an hour after bar time? Why don't they wait a couple hours? Because everyone's just milling about trying to decide where they're going to go at that point.
Yeah.
And, I don't know where I'm going to go. Where are you going to go? Oh, my God, there's a whole bunch of cops. Let's go harass them. Oh! And then it deteriorates very quickly from there. Then they get maced and blah, 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 And then the mayor at the end of the day says, we'll never have Halloween again.
Yeah. You know what, mayor? It's not up to you. I know. There's bars open.
No, they're
talking
about shutting down all bars, shutting down businesses.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah.
After the smoking ban, I can see that happening.
We just don't
time.
Like you guys having businesses.
Oh, yeah.
But, I was out early. I went and saw the Hold Steady, the Constantines, and Thunderbirds Are Now as an early show that night, and the Constantines were awesome. It was a great show. But the costumes were really fun. Everyone was out having a really good time early.
What's the best costume you saw?
The best costume I saw was Ash. There's a guy dressed as Ash from Evil Dead 2 who had the chainsaw on one arm, a blue blood-splattered shirt with a shotgun on his back, and he looked awesome. That was a great costume.
Oh, man.
And there were a lot of kitty costumes out there as well. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Tor?
Well, I was amongst the trick-or-treater crowd. I probably didn't see anybody older than 7. The best costume I saw, which is very appropriate for what we're doing now, is I saw a little boy dressed up as an iPod.
Excellent! No way. Oh, beautiful!
Geek Award. Geek Award.
Oh, man.
That is awesome.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Spucknet, did you see any good costumes?
You know what? I can't pinpoint any one particular costume. I just want to do a big shout out to a lot of near nudity. And I just got to see 2 big thumbs way up. So until next week, good day.
Radioactivity and radioactive materials have many peacetime uses. But we know, too, that they can be used harmfully. As in atomic bomb. Don't hesitate. Find trouble. Everyone is in on this. Strangers will understand.
Everything goes according to plan. Everything goes according to plan.
Doing a good job means simply following the rules. In this early and troubled stage of the atomic age, our very lives may depend on always being alert.